in the Atlantic Ocean, far from the nearest land. Danny's new viewport was in place before they hit the water. The shotgun sank at once. The men cried out for help as they tried to swim. They weren't good at it. In fact, one of them was panicking and clearly had no idea how to swim. Not Greeks, then. Hermia's family were proud of their heritage among the Thalassocracy, and they were all taught to swim as babies. Danny needed a way to hold them in place where they'd be helpless, unable to escape, but in no danger. Gravity would have to do the police work for him. Danny made a gate that scooped them out of the water, then dumped them 20 yards over it. He moved the mouth just under them to catch them. They fell a half inch into the gate's mouth, which tossed them back up that half inch and dropped them again. It gave them a continuous sensation of falling, but they could breathe and they could hear. Through the viewport, Danny spoke to them. "I could have put you 1,000 feet down, and the ocean would already have crushed you." The man who had held the shotgun was weeping, but the others seemed capable of listening. "Where is the woman who lived in that hotel room?" asked Danny. "Woman?" asked the man. Danny moved the mouth of the gate, so now they fell 20 yards before rising again. He let that go on for a minute and then returned them to a half-inch fall. "Try again," said Danny. "She go to the beach," said the man. "Then we go in her room. She not come back yet." Now that Danny had a chance to study the men, he could start making guesses. "Persians?" he asked. "Hindi?" The assassin managed to look scornful in the midst of his ongoing terror. "Tell me what family you're from," said Danny. "Never," said the man. So it was a family. An orphan would have declared his non-family status proudly. And it was a family that regarded hiding its identity as more important than life itself. Any of the known families might have wanted to do this assassination stealthily, but the secrecy wouldn't be important enough to die for it. After all, killing gate mages was something they were all sworn to do. A family, then, that everyone thought was extinct. Danny ran through a mental list. Middle Eastern from the look of them, but all the families were Indo-European, and in the Middle East, that list wasn't very long. "Hittites?" he asked. "No!" shouted the man. Hittites they were, then. Interesting. Exciting, even. How had the Hittite family remained hidden all this time? They were supposed to have been wiped out before Pompey came to Syria, though some family historians speculated that they might have adopted the Armenians and helped them surreptitiously. But historical interest would have to wait. "If Hermia is dead," said Danny, "so are you." "Alive!" the man cried. "We not touch her." "No great gates!" shouted the other man, the weeping one. "Bell comes! Bell goes to Iliwi!" So they were allies of the gate thief, or shared his fear. Iliwi was an ancient name of Westall. Danny remembered the runic inscription in the Library of Congress. "We have faced Bell, and he has ruled the hearts of many." Man-mages from another world, a world not Earth and not Westall. Loki found the dark gate of Bell through which their god poured fear into the world. Why would it matter whether Danny made a great gate if Bell already knew how to make gates of his own? The Hittites knew something, and he had to find out what it was. Danny moved the tail of the gate that suspended them to the barn. They plopped in a sodden mass amid the straw near a milking stall. At once Danny brought back the mouth of the gate, scooped them up, and hung them in the air 10 feet above the barn floor. "What's going on, Danny?" demanded Marion. "How can you bring strangers to Hittites?" said Danny. "They shot me, and they know something about Bell." There had been enough discussion of the runic passage that everyone immediately understood the significance. "I need you to question them while I'm gone," said Danny to Marion. "I'm not an interrogator," said Marion. "I didn't say torture them," said Danny. "Ask them questions." "You're torturing them," said Marion. "Look how afraid they are. They're falling and falling. People pay money to go up in airplanes and free fall like this before they open their parachutes," said Danny. "It's not torture. It's just a way of keeping them where we want them." "Not here," said Marion. "Fine," said Danny. "I'll put them back out over the Atlantic till I find Hermia." "No!" shouted Leslie from the door. "Let them go at once." "They killed me," shouted Danny. "They're assassins." "And Hittites," added Vivi. "So they're evil and interesting." "This is not what a good man does," said Leslie coldly. Danny knew at once that she was right. His fear and anger had made him act by reflex. Yet he had also shown restraint, and he wanted credit for it. "I could have killed them," said Danny. "I didn't kill them." "They're sopping wet," said Leslie. "I didn't know they couldn't swim," said Danny. "But I pulled them out of the water, didn't I?" "Get them out of my barn," said Leslie. "Now." "Back to the ocean, then." Again, Danny had to move the tail of the gate first, which put them back in the water, flailing and sputtering and screaming whenever they could catch their breath. Then he got them back up in the air. By now they thought of that continuous freefall as a good thing, no doubt, compared to drowning. Danny followed them this time, suspending himself in the air. No falling in the water. When he was moving himself through space, he was much quicker, more deft about it. "I'm going to go see where my friend is," said Danny. "If she's hurt or dead, I'll do the same thing to one of you while the other watches." "We not to touch her. We not talk to her," the less panicked man insisted. Danny gated himself back to Hermia's hotel room in Rio. It was empty this time, no shotguns waiting. The door was undamaged. They must have bribed their way in. Danny went to the balcony and looked out over the broad beach. So many people lying there or milling around. But after a few minutes, he spotted someone who might be Hermia. He made a gate near her. If it was Hermia, she'd see it and step into it. If it wasn't, she wouldn't. It was. She did. "Is it already time?" she asked as soon as she was in the hotel room. "I came here for you," said Danny, "and I was met by a shotgun blast." Hermia saw the pellet pattern on the wall, Danny's punctured clothes, and exclaimed softly, "My family wouldn't..." "Not your family," said Danny. "They just shot to kill, without a warning." "No negotiations, just bang."
"Who was it?"
"Hittites, I'm pretty sure." He grinned. "Extinct gods with shotguns," said Hermia. "Extinct for 2,000 years, no less. They didn't actually admit to being Hittite, but it's the one they denied instead of being evasive. I have them hanging over the Atlantic."
"I want to talk to them."
"You want to lock the gate they're using so they drop into the water and drown," said Danny.
"Eventually, yes," said Hermia. "You're too soft, Danny. People who shoot first can't be left alive."
"People who talk about Bell have some explaining to do," said Danny. "And they didn't actually kill me."
"They killed your clothing," said Hermia.
"Walk around like this and you'll start a new fashion. Perforated clothing. Shotgun style by Calvin Klein." "I want to make the Great Gate before anything else happens," said Danny. "Those clowns aren't going anywhere. We'll have plenty of time to question them after."
"If we make it back," said Hermia.
"If we don't, then someday somebody will find a heap of bones and some empty clothing hanging in the air over some spot in the Atlantic. It'll make the cover of the Inquirer."
"You sound like you don't care," said Hermia.
"But I know you do." Danny sighed. Leslie thought the worst of him, Hermia thought the best of him, and they were both right. Danny gated the two men into a single cell in the county jail in Lexington, Virginia. "They're on dry ground now, all right," he told her. "Now let's get this gate made before somebody notices them and lets them out."
"Where are they?" she demanded.
"In jail," said Danny. He made a viewport into the cell and showed her. Hermia spoke to them.
"Don't make a sound," she said. "If you try to get out, or if you talk to anybody at all, it's back to the ocean for you."
And then she added a few words in a language Danny had never heard.
"Yes, they understood me," she said to Danny. "The Hittite-Armenian theory seems to have some merit."
"You speak Armenian?" asked Danny.
"It came up," said Hermia. "I'm a gate mage. It's a language."
Danny reached out his hand, and the two of them gated to the barn. Chapter 6 Angry Gate.
"What did you do with them?" demanded Leslie.
"They're alive," said Hermia, "and safe."
Leslie looked at Danny suspiciously.
"I want to hear it from him."
"Because you think you can tell if I'm lying?" asked Danny.
"We assume you're lying," said Stone, "because we're all hoping you killed them and had done with it."
I'm hoping no such thing, said Leslie.
We can't control a gate mage anyway, said Marion to Leslie. He did what he did, he'll do what he does.
I can make him feel guilty about it, said Leslie.
That's not very sporting, said Vivi.
Danny feels guilty for being alive. Make the great gate, said Hermia. If the Hittites are onto us, then everybody knows that there are gate mages in the world again, and they'll be looking for a great gate.
That's an argument against making one, said Stone.
It's an argument for making one now, said Hermia. And all of us going through it except Marion and Leslie because they've already gone and somebody has to keep watch.
You're coming right back, aren't you? Leslie asked Danny.
Unless the gate thief gets me this time, said Danny.
Do you think there's any chance of that? Asked Vivi.
He's weaker than he was, said Danny. But he knows a lot more than I do. Danny walked to the rope, took hold of it, pulled the noose wide open.
I hate that noose, said Vivi. It looks so grim.
Danny made no answer, just pulled the noose down over his head and shoulders, then tightened it under his armpits. Now he could put his weight on the rope while keeping his hands free. His feet were still on the floor of the barn. He turned around and around until the rope was so twisted that it lifted him off the floor. Only the tips of his toes touched.
"Want us to wind you tighter?" asked Hermia.
"I'm pretty tightly wound already," said Danny.
"Very funny," said Vivi.
"I'm still not sure whether I should go through it," said Stone.
"Do it," said Vivi, "and keep me company.
It will give you the power to make plants grow and cover everything," said Marion.
"That's kudzu," said Stone. "It doesn't need any help from me."
Vivi took hold of his hand.
"Come and go with me to that land where I'm bound," she sang.
"Is that a real song?" asked Stone.
"A very old one," said Vivi. She sang again. "I'm gonna walk the streets of glory on that great day in the morning."
"I need to concentrate," said Danny, "and I need the two of you to be watching so you know when to go through the gate."
Vivi smiled. "There'll be singing in that land, voices ringing in that land. There'll be freedom in that land where I'm bound."
"Nobody's ever heard of an obedient gate mage," said Stone.
"Serves you right, Danny," said Leslie.
Danny silently raised his feet, leaned back, closed his eyes. He began to spin. 20 gates at once this time. Only this time he wasn't alone. Many of the other mages' gates inside him were clamoring, demanding that he use them to make the great gate. He didn't understand when he tried to use a captive gate before it had rejected him. Then he realized. He had tried to use a gate belonging to the gate thief, so of course it said no. The captive outselves now begging to be part of the great gate were the ones the gate thief had stolen from other mages. They wanted to be part of a living gate instead of mere prisoners. One by one, he drew these eager gates into his spinning, until now he was spinning a score of other mages' gates along with his own. He couldn't tell if they were making the great gate stronger by adding more threads to the connection, or weaker by adding new textures that didn't fit well with his own. Danny knew nothing about what he was doing. Yet it seemed fair to him to include the outselves of these long-dead mages, which had been stolen from them because of their attempts to make great gates. "You lost your magery by doing this. Did I capture you to keep you imprisoned or to set you free and let your power live again in the world?"
"Free, free, free," answered the gates inside him. "Me, me, me," demanded so many gates that he had not yet used.
Enough, thought Danny. 20 of mine and 20 of you.
He was spinning rapidly now. Not as fast as he had been spinning in the gym, but it was enough. This time he could feel the power in it. This time he understood that what mattered was not the speed of the spinning, but the intertwining of the gates. It truly felt like a rope, 4 great strands, each consisting of 10 gates. Because he had made a great gate before and learned so much in the making of it, he could understand it better this time. 2 of the strands were made entirely of Danny's gates, and the other 2 were made of the other mages' gates.
he wove all of his into the return gate, whose tail would be here in the barn to bring them home, and all of theirs into the gate of sending, whose mouth would be here. They spun themselves together like 40 slender tornadoes, all of them spinning on their own, weaving their own patterns. And then he cast them upward and outward with all the strength of his in-self, and felt rather than heard the song of rejoicing as the stranger's gates leapt out into space, into time, carrying his own gates with them. They connected in another world. The great gate was made. "Now," said Vivi. "Untie me," said Danny, still spinning. Strong hands stopped his spin. Other hands loosened the noose and pulled it over his arms. He still hadn't opened his eyes. He didn't need them. It was with another sense that he saw the great gate. It was very different this time. As if the earlier gate had been woven of one color of thread, while this one was of many bright colors that combined and recombined. Gate of many colors, thought Danny. What does it mean to have a gate of many colors? He felt Vivi and Hermia take him by the hands. The mouth of the gate was wide. Danny stepped into it. Joined to him, they did not need to step. They were with him as the gate gathered him in, and there they were, in bright sunlight on the other world. Danny opened his eyes. The light was dazzling after the relative darkness of the barn, but he could see that they were surrounded by tall stones, rough-hewn, set on end into the grassy ground at the brow of a gently sloping hill. "Stonehenge," said Danny. "A gate-catcher," said Stone. "Fool," said another voice. A stranger's voice. A man. Danny turned to where the voice had come from. But it wasn't the voice that told him who the man was. It was the in-self. It was the few gates the man had inside him. "Gate thief," said Danny. "Why are you here?" "Fool," said the gate thief. "To use those angry, wild gates. They want it. Centuries in prison have made them uncontrollable. Insane." The gate thief spoke Westilian with a strange accent, but Danny understood him perfectly. "They wanted to be part of the great gate," said Danny. "Are you here to do battle with me again?"
"He wants to come through the gate," said Vivi.
"He's here to kill you," said Hermia.
"You know nothing," said the gate thief. "Someone has to teach you."
"Lock the gate behind us, Hermia," said Danny.
"Do we have to go so quickly?" asked Vivi. "This is Westil, and the sun is so bright I can hardly claim to have seen it."
"I don't want him to follow us," said Danny.
"You'll be back here soon enough," said the gate thief, "begging me to teach you how to undo this terrible thing you've done."
"Why did you eat all the gates?" demanded Danny, his curiosity overpowering his good sense, making him stay long enough to ask.
"You know why," said the gate thief. "My captive gates have told you. They say the name of Bell." "Bell, the gate mage from the other world," said the gate thief. "The world of soul stealers. The world of man mages. Fool."
"Let's go," said Hermia. "Who knows what he's plotting to do while he keeps us talking?"
Meanwhile, Stone knelt in the grass, his hands splayed out, digging into the soil.
"It's so alive," he whispered. "It's you that's alive," said the gate thief. "Coming through the great gate has made you strong. All of you too strong. You have nothing to fear from me."
"That's what he wants us to believe," said Hermia.
"Gate mages are such liars," said Vivi, rather proudly, Danny thought. "What do I call you?" asked Danny. "Loki?"
"Wad," said the gate thief. "It's my name since I came out of the tree."
Danny had no idea what that meant. "I'm not giving you back your gates," said Danny.
"I don't need them," said Wad.
"Do you know what happened to Sed?" asked Stone. "He came through the earlier gate and he stayed."
"A wind mage," said Wad. "I know where he is."
"Is he safe?" asked Stone.
Wad laughed.
"Is Westil safe with him here?
the most powerful mage in the world now. The winds that he blows.
Is he causing harm? Asked Vivi.
He doesn't know how not to cause harm, said Wad, any more than you do. And there's no one to balance him, no one to teach him. That's what you're doing here, setting monsters loose in the world.
Becoming monsters ourselves by that reckoning, said Danny.
We're all monsters, said Wad.
Let's go back, said Hermia.
Danny could see him clearly now, standing between two stones, leaning on neither. A slight man. Like Danny, he was neither tall nor short, neither strong-looking nor weak. And his face was neither young nor old, but ageless, with eyes like deep water, gray as the belly of a thundercloud, looking into Danny with such sadness, such anger, such understanding.
Don't look at him, said Hermia. He's too strong for us.
I'm weak, said Wad. You have most of my out-self inside you now. What do I call you?
You don't, said Danny.
He gathered the mouth of the great gate around himself, and they were in the barn again. The sunlight was gone, the stones, the grass.
Stone knelt, his fingers pressed against the floor. He was weeping.
It's a desert here compared to there, he said.
We met the gate thief, Vivi told Marion. He was almost as pretty as Danny, and as old as the stars.
I can't lock the other gate, said Hermia. The outbound gate, the one you made from the hearts of strangers.
Danny could see that she had locked the return gate and was trying to close the other.
You can't control it because there are 20 mages in it, said Danny. You have to close them one at a time.
He began pinching off the gates.
But by the time he got to the third gate, the first was open again.
It won't stay closed, he said.
I see now, said Hermia. And instead of trying to close the whole great gate, she began to join him in closing the individual gates.
I can see everything more clearly. I'm so much stronger. You'd think I could close them.
Danny could see that she was getting no better results than he was. The inbound great gate, the one made entirely from Danny's own gates, was closed and locked, but the gates of the other mages were not so obedient. They willed themselves to be open, and though Danny and Hermia could close them, they would not stay closed.
We have a wide-open public gate here, said Vivi. I can see what you're doing, and they won't stay closed. They don't want to be closed.
Wild gates, said Danny. Angry wild gates, he called them.
Angry at him, not us, said Vivi.
I held them prisoner too, said Danny. And it doesn't matter who they're angry at. They aren't people, just the wraiths of people, the lingering memory of them, but strong.
Going through a great gate strengthened us, said Vivi. But they are a great gate. How strong is that?
Let them stay open, said Danny. It isn't going to work no matter what we do.
Are you saying that you can't close the great gate? Asked Marion.
I closed the one coming back to Earth, said Hermia. But not the one leading to Westel from here.
So my barn is now a great gate, and you can't close it? Demanded Leslie.
Why did you use those gates? Said Hermia.
They wanted it, said Danny. It seemed only fair after so long in prison.
But you didn't know them, what kind of men they were, said Hermia.
A wraith preserves the character of its maker, and these might have been very bad mages.
Yes, that seems obvious now, said Danny. I chose the most insistent, the most selfish, but it never occurred to me that I couldn't control these gates.
You've never faced a gate that wasn't under your control, said Marion. You've never seen a gate that wasn't of your making.
But he did make it, said Vivi.
I wound them together. I threw them into space-time, said Danny. But Marion's right. They aren't my gates.
Then move them, said Leslie. Get it out of my barn.
Danny tried. The gate wouldn't budge. Only when he stopped trying to move it did it move in the opposite direction. And it widened.
It's trying to eat us, said Hermia, alarmed.
It was true. The mouth of the great gate was seeking them out.
Take them, cried Vivi. They were captive before. Capture them again.
Danny tried to unmake the gate as he had done with his previous great gate, but these were not his own gates, and they dodged him. He could work on one at a time, but they all resisted him. They refused to be captive again.
I thought passing through the gate was supposed to make me irresistibly strong, said Danny.
They're stronger too, said Vivi.
Dead as they are, it made them more powerful to be part of a great gate.
Wad took them, though. Loki, I mean, said Danny.
They weren't all woven together like this, said Hermia. And he knows more than you.
Now Danny understood what Wad had meant. You'll be back here soon enough, begging me to teach you how to undo this terrible thing you've done. Danny wanted to go back right now, to demand answers from Wad.
No,
shouted Hermia.
No what? Asked Danny.
Don't step into that gate, she cried.
Don't you see? It's not yours. What's to stop it from moving itself into the depths of the sea?
What have we done? Asked Vivi miserably.
You don't control it at all, said Leslie.
She wasn't just angry now, she was afraid.
It could go out and look for the families that are hunting for it, asked Marion.
I don't know what it can do, said Danny.
Wad was right. I am a fool.
At least the return gate is closed, said Hermia.
If the families go to Westill, they can't get back.
But that's terrible, said Danny.
What right do we have to set them loose in that world?
I have to reopen the other gate. I have to make it so there's no space between them, so that if you go through the gate, you come back here immediately. No pause, no chance to see the sights.
Danny acted even as he spoke. But no sooner did he move the mouth of the return gate directly in front of the outbound gate than the wild gate moved its tail away. Not far. The two great gates were so woven together, so inseparable, that it was only a few yards between the tail of the wild gate and the mouth of Danny's return gate.
It can't get away from my gate either, said Danny in relief.
As long as I keep mine anchored, it can't go far. Danny tethered the mouth of his own part of the great gate to the walls of the barn. It was like hobbling a horse. The wild gates could move the mouth of the combined gate, but only a few yards.
This is our worst nightmare, said Leslie. A gate you can't control here in our barn. Do you understand what the families will do now?
Whatever it takes to get to this gate, said Hermia.
They don't know it's gone wild, said Vivi. I don't plan to tell them, do you?
The gate is hungry, said Danny. It wants to be used. It'll find a way.
Then let's feed it, said Hermia.
Negotiate with the families. Let them each send a couple of mages through, exactly as we planned all along. They don't have to know that we can't close the gate or move it or anything. You gate them here, two at a time, and send them through. How will they know that you aren't as much in control of the Great Gate as you are of the gates you make here on Middleguard?
Or make another Great Gate, one you control completely, said Vivi, and starve this one to death.
I don't know what to do, said Danny. Wad was right. I have to go talk to him. I have to ask him.
Terrible idea, said Stone.
If you do go back, make another great gate, said Hermia. Don't ever step into this one again.
She's right, said Vivi. This is an angry gate. Isn't that what Wad said?
Who's Wad? Asked Marion.
Loki, said Danny.
The gate thief, said Hermia.
He's dangerous, said Stone. He makes me believe in the devil.
I'm screwing everything up, said Danny. Stone was sitting on the floor now.
What else did you expect? He asked. Nobody's done this in 14 centuries. And it's not your fault that the gate thief had all these captives. It's his fault, not yours. The only thing you did was not let him capture you.
That was my first mistake, said Danny.
No, said Leslie. Not a mistake.
We'll figure this out, said Marion. We'll find a way to get it all under control.
But first, said Leslie, we're getting all my cows out of this barn.
Chapter 7 Amulets. Danny had first come to Parry McClure High School as a long-dreamed-of adventure. And the dream had come true. He had made friends. He had learned how to use his power, and he had done good things with it. A few pranks, too, but he hadn't used it to win races,
Andy hadn't hurt anybody, unless you counted humiliating Coach Bleeder. Now, though, he came as if he had graduated, then found out he had flunked a test after all and had to come back. Only nobody knew he had been gone. Nobody knew he had failed. His friends didn't believe him when he told them. They were gathered in the old smoking area, the one that the teachers regularly checked. But since they were only talking, not smoking anything, it was a good place for Danny and his friends to gather.
"So can we use the gate?" asked Pat.
"I told you, nobody can."
"I thought you said it was wild," said Wheeler. "Anybody could use it."
"We're not letting anybody get near enough to use it," said Danny.
"Then what's the big deal?" asked Hal. "Is it like the last gate you can ever make?"
"No, I can make as many as I want."
"So can you take us to that other world?" asked Lorette.
"Why would I do that?" asked Danny.
"You're not mages. It wouldn't do you any good. And what if you got stranded there? It isn't a safe place."
"You're right," said Pat. "Here you can only get run over by cars or catch some hideous disease or get blown up in chemistry class."
"I didn't blow anybody up," said Hal.
"But you tried," said Wheeler.
"I tried to get them to cancel school for the day," said Hal.
"Can we stop talking about your failures, Hal?" said Zena.
"Yeah, let's go back to talking about mine," said Danny.
Zena gripped his arm and spoke so earnestly and pressed so close that he could feel her breath on his cheek.
"You haven't failed at anything, Danny North," she said.
"You're like a god."
"The god of screw-ups," said Danny.
Zena kissed his cheek.
"Your screw-ups are better than other people's successes.
So you went to the other world." "Westall," said Lorette.
"That was supposed to make you more powerful."
"I don't feel any different," said Danny.
"Well, can you do stuff you couldn't do before?"
"I don't know."
"Why don't you know?" asked Lorette.
"There isn't a manual," said Danny.
"They kill mages like me. They don't exactly provide me with instructions."
"Who reads the instructions?" asked Lorette. "Haven't you tried anything?"
"I wouldn't even know what to try," said Danny. "I made gates before. I can still make gates," he shrugged.
"So you can take us to Disney World?" asked Sin.
Danny hadn't expected that, not from the goth with constantly infected piercings.
"You want to go to Disney World?"
"I'd say Paris, but I don't speak French," said Sin.
"Come on, I've never been."
"Me neither," said Zena.
"I don't want to go," said Pat.
"I don't like using gates to steal," said Danny.
"Who said anything about stealing?" asked Sin. "Just get us in."
"And then get us through all the lines and into the rides without tickets," said Lorette.
"Is that so much to ask?"
"They'll catch me," said Wheeler. "I always look guilty."
"How about Cape Canaveral?" asked Hal.
"You provide the security badges and I'll get us in," said Danny.
"This isn't even fun," said Pat.
"What about all those people trying to kill you?" asked Zena.
"Are you safe now?"
"I don't know," said Danny.
"And what about teaching us how to help you?" asked Hal. "Or is that off just because you screwed up and made some gate angry?"
"I can't have you help me," said Danny.
"I'd just screw that up too, and then you'd get killed."
"Wow, he's really down on himself," said Lorette.
"He needs cheering up," said Zena. She kissed his cheek, not a sisterly peck. Her lips brushed his cheek and lingered. It made him feel a tingle in his legs and in his butt. He didn't know that tingling could be so weirdly dislocated.
"Don't go there, Zena," said Hal.
"Even if you are a warrior princess," said Wheeler.
"Jealous?" asked Zena.
"Yes," said Wheeler. Everyone looked at him in surprise. "It's just Danny, and all of a sudden you're getting all kissy with him," said Wheeler.
"Yeah," said Lorette. "Just because he's a god, why would you want to kiss him?"
"You're right," said Zena, clinging to Danny all the more tightly. "I want to have his baby."
At that, Danny pulled away. Joking around was one thing. This was something else.
"I just have to think," he said.
"He can't think if all his blood has rushed out of his head," said Lorette. "I'm just trying to figure out if there's a way I can keep you guys safe," said Danny.
"We'd be safe in Disney World," said Sin. "It's the safest place on Earth."
Danny thought of what he needed his friends to do. Gate them as emissaries to the families to explain the terms they'd have to agree to in order to pass someone through a great gate. Danny couldn't go himself, and he couldn't send Vivi or Hermia either.
The families would set traps for them. But what would be the point of trapping drowthers? That was the problem. Since the families didn't regard drowthers as having any value, they wouldn't hold them as hostages. If they got annoyed, they'd just kill his emissaries. In fact, as soon as anyone realized that Danny had friends, they might try to use them against him, threaten them, follow them, kidnap them, kill them, without waiting for Danny to send them anywhere. He couldn't concentrate on all of them at once. He couldn't keep them safe. "What have I done to you guys?" asked Danny.
"What are you talking about?" asked Lorette.
Danny explained his worry.
"Cool," said Wheeler. "It's like being inside a comic book."
"Except we're collateral damage," said Hal.
"We're the red shirt guys," said Pat.
Danny made a gate, a very small one, and put it directly above a small stone lying in the clearing.
"Hal," said Danny, "would you pick up that stone?"
Hal didn't bother looking to see exactly which stone. He just lunged for the general area, reaching for any stone, and when his hand brushed the gate, he fell into it, and he was sitting 10 feet away.
"That is disorienting," he complained.
"That wasn't what I wanted," said Danny. "I'm trying to see if I can tie a gate to a thing instead of a place. Just move the stone, somebody. Lorette, keep your hand low and move it slowly, and I'll tell you which stone." She moved carefully, though Danny also noticed that she bent over at such an angle that her considerable cleavage was aimed right at him. Was that because it was her habit, or because she was thinking the same way Zena was? That because Danny could do majory, he was suddenly cool enough to be worth flirting with?
"That one," said Danny.
Lorette picked up the stone. The gate stayed in the air above where the stone had been.
"Damn," said Danny.
"Didn't work?" asked Lorette. "I was hoping I could do it because I went to Westall. The enhancement of my powers."
"Bummer," said Hal.
He was back in the circle now.
"Who cares?" asked Sin. "It's just a rock."
"He wants us to be able to carry gates around with us," said Pat, "so we can stick a finger in a gate and be somewhere else." Sometimes she surprised him. Sour as she was always thinking. Maybe when you don't care whether other people like you, you have more brain space for analysis.
"Well, there's no reason it shouldn't work," said Hal, "whether you went through a great gate or not."
"What do you know about magic?" said Zena contemptuously.
"What I know about is physics," said Hal.
"Basic, elementary, pathetic, every semi-educated moron should know at level physics."
"Zena slept through the physics unit in 8th grade science," said Lorette.
"Danny always attaches his gates to small moving objects," said Hal. "He's never done anything else."
Danny looked at the gate he had just made, the mouth and tail of it, and couldn't figure out what Hal meant.
"The surface of the Earth is spinning one complete revolution per day," said Hal. "At the equator, that means it's moving at 1,000 miles an hour. Here, it's about 800 miles an hour. The Earth is also moving around the Sun at 67,000 miles an hour. So when Danny's gates seem to stay in the same place, they're really moving incredibly fast,
so they're attached to something."
"You said small moving objects," said Lorette.
"Compared to the Sun, Earth is a small moving object," said Hal.
"Compared to the galaxy, Earth is a blip. The only reason we think it's big is because we're even smaller."
"Thanks for the info, science boy," said Zena.
"Like he said, everybody knows that," said Wheeler.
"Oh, you had 67,800 miles an hour sitting there in your brain?" said Pat.
"No. But I knew that the Earth spins completely around once a day," said Wheeler. "And I knew it went all the way around the Sun once a year. That means it's a seriously fast-moving object. Duh."
"If you're so smart, how fast is the solar system moving around the center of the galaxy?" Pat asked Hal.
483,000 miles an hour, said Hal.
"And how fast is the Milky Way moving toward Andromeda?"
"That's impossible to say," said Hal, "because they're moving toward each other, and there's no stationary point of reference.
The whole galaxy is moving 1.3 million miles an hour compared to the CBR, said Pat triumphantly.
"What's the CBR?" asked Sin.
"Cosmic background radiation," said Hal.
"And that's not what you asked, Pat.
You asked about how fast the Milky Way was moving toward Andromeda.
This is all so sad, said Sin. While other boys were memorizing football players' stats, Hal was memorizing the stats of astronomical objects.
I wonder if Earth will make the playoffs this year, said Lorette.
And you girls memorize what George Clooney eats for breakfast, said Wheeler.
Fat walking fossil, said Xena.
The cast of Twilight, then, said Wheeler. Apparently the girls couldn't argue with that one. It was no secret that Hal was smart, and Pat was the smartest of the girls. And Danny knew all this stuff, too. He knew everything he had ever read. The difference was that Hal had realized it applied to this situation.
I get the point, said Danny.
I'm attaching the gates to a point on the surface of a spinning moving object, so there's no reason I can't attach it to a pebble except that the pebble is smaller.
Danny gazed steadily at the stone, trying to figure out how to attach a gate to it the way he had attached the gate to a spot in the air above the stone.
Meanwhile, Sin had a question. How do you wizards, or whatever you are, how do you know we don't have magic?
Don't talk to him, he's making gates, said Lorette.
We don't know you don't have magic, said Danny. Our blood has been mixing with the rest of the human race for thousands of years, so you probably have some Mither Mage ancestry.
He tried to hold the image of the stone in his mind and create a gate solely in relation to the stone, not distracted by any other surrounding feature.
So send us to Westall, said Sin. Maybe we'll come back with superpowers.
Yeah, said Hal.
Cool, said Wheeler.
Danny's concentration broke. He was impatient with himself, but they only saw that he was annoyed.
Sorry, said Lorette.
Stop distracting him, said Xena protectively.
Why don't you hold it in your hand and really focus on it? Asked Pat.
Disconnect it from the ground.
Lorette handed him a stone. Danny took it, bent over it, stared at it, made a gate. He moved the stone a little to the left. The mouth of the gate moved with it. It was that simple. Remove the pebble from its context, concentrate a little, and he had an enchanted stone.
You look happy, said Xena.
Does that mean you're thinking of me naked?
It means he attached a gate to the stone, said Pat. We all try not to think of you naked.
So, what now? Asked Hal. You give us each a stone to use if we need to make a quick getaway?
A stone's a lousy idea, said Lorette.
Why? Asked Danny. He had thought it was a pretty good idea.
First, said Lorette, what if we drop our stone? How can we tell which one was ours, except by brushing our hand against it and taking off like Hal just did? And then we still don't have the stone, but maybe whoever was chasing us finds it and follows us.
Don't drop the stone, said Wheeler.
Right, like none of us ever drops anything, said Pat.
Second, said Lorette, suppose somebody handcuffs us and searches us and finds a stone in our pockets or purses or whatever. How many people our age carry rocks around?
Okay, said Danny. Not a stone.
I was just learning how to do it, and there are plenty of stones.
A ring, said Sin.
A nose ring, said Xena.
Then every time you blow your nose, you'll transport somewhere.
Or you sniff and you get sent to the moon, said Wheeler.
One ring to rule them all, one ring to find them, intoned Hal. One ring to bring them all, and in the darkness bind them.
Are you saying we're on Sauron's side? Asked Wheeler, a little angry.
Sauron doesn't have a side, said Danny.
You forget, the families are all the gods, all the fairies, all the elves and ghosts and werewolves and poltergeists and everything. Good and bad. The families are on both sides of everything. There's no good or evil with them, just whatever they feel like doing and have the power to do it.
That sounds like as good a definition of evil as I've ever heard, said Pat.
Well, look what I just did, said Danny. I felt like attaching a gate to a stone, and when Xena suggested that I really focus on it, then I could do it.
Was that evil?
Pat shrugged.
Depends on whether you throw the stone at some other high school's quarterback and jump him 10 yards back and drop him on his ass.
That's just a prank, said Wheeler. Can you do it?
He wouldn't need a stone, said Hal. He could just do it.
And it would be evil, said Pat, hurting somebody else just for the fun of it.
So was it evil when I messed with Coach Leader? Asked Danny.
A little bit, maybe, said Pat.
But mostly funny, said Hal.
And he deserved it, said Wheeler.
Danny remembered the men he had terrified into submission out over the Atlantic and then stashed in a jail. They were murderers, or meant to be. They deserved worse than he had done to them. But it didn't make him feel all that great about the fact that he had the power to torture them like that, and that he had just done it the moment he thought of it.
Something you already carry with you, said Danny. And I'll try to put the gate on it in such a way that you don't just accidentally pop through it. So don't give me your wallet.
Wheeler can give you the condom he always carries, said Hal. He's never going to use that.
Wheeler glared at him. They gave it to me in fifth grade. It's like a rabbit's foot. I'm not going to use it. It's older than my dick by now.
You, said Lorette. You made me think of your weenie.
Said the girl with the constant cleavage, said Wheeler.
Please, said Danny.
Something you carry but you don't touch, but you could get to it in an emergency. Pat already had a tampon out of her purse.
Our turn to say, you, said Hal.
Every girl carries them and nobody thinks anything about it, said Pat.
I don't, said Sin.
I carry extras, said Lorette, getting two tampons out of her purse.
Then I am using my condom, said Wheeler, reaching into his pocket.
I don't carry a purse, said Sin. What am I supposed to do, tuck it behind my ear?
She handed the tampon back to Lorette.
You don't carry a spare just in case? Asked Lorette.
I'm never early, and I'm not afraid of a little blood anyway, said Sin.
Are you afraid of a little vomit? Asked Hal. Because this is making me sick.
Welcome to Girlville, said Pat. But since you're never going to have a girlfriend or a wife, it won't matter if you're squeamish.
What if I'm rummaging in my purse for something else and I brush against it? Asked Zena, looking doubtfully at the tampon she was holding.
And should I unwrap it?
Danny took it out of her hand.
He's touching one, said Hal.
Girl cooties, said Wheeler.
Danny studied the thing, squeezed it, pushed his finger against the end.
Just give me a second, he said.
He made a really tiny gate completely inside the end of the tampon. He tossed the tampon around on his hand and nothing happened. But when he pushed his finger into the end, he jumped through the gate. This time only a few inches away, but it still made him lose his balance.
Oh, a 3-inch gate, said Pat. That'll show him. Better be nice to me or I'll move another 3 inches.
I'm just testing, said Danny. You have to push your finger into the end before the gate will work.
What happens if you forget which one is the gate and you use it? Asked Hal.
I thought you didn't like talking about messy girl stuff, said Lorette.
I can't help what pops into my head, said Hal.
Please tell me you're not picturing me using it, said Pat.
Well, now I am, and thanks so much, said Hal.
I don't have anything that isn't hard and shiny, said Sin.
Your lip gloss, said Pat.
Sin pulled a tiny canister out of her pocket.
It's hard and shiny, she said.
The stuff inside is black and squishy, said Pat.
I can put the gate down inside, said Danny.
If you hide a gate in here, I can't use it and my lips will get pink, said Sin.
Lorette pulled a stub of black licorice out of her purse.
Here, it's black and it's squishy.
Sin took the licorice and studied it.
What century was this made in?
It's old, it's black, and it's gross, said Lorette.
Nobody will be surprised that you have it in your pocket. Or does your mother wash your jeans?
Sin gave a disdainful toss of her head.
Washing is so bourgeois.
10 minutes later, they all had something flexible with a tiny gate mouth inside it. 3 tampons, a licorice stub, a condom package, and a lion-shaped eraser that Hal had in his pocket.
Why a lion? Asked Sin.
Hal shrugged. Got it as a prize at the dentist one time.
And you carry it with you, said Sin.
Lost a tooth, got a lion, said Hal.
It's Aslan, said Wheeler.
Hal looked really angry.
Stop it, said Danny. Have some loyalty, Wheeler.
He told about my condom, said Wheeler.
So if one of us pisses off another one of us, then suddenly we're all about getting even? Asked Pat.
Oh, that'll work.
We don't tell each other's secrets, said Lorette. And we don't make fun of each other.
Does that mean I can't mention your cleavage, ever? Asked Danny.
We don't make fun of things that matter, said Lorette. Making fun of my cleavage is just another way of telling me that it's working.
I think that's a good rule, said Danny.
We all make fun of how Lorette shows her boobs, asked Zena.
We don't make each other feel bad, said Danny. We don't tell each other secrets to outsiders.
The others agreed.
All of your gates, said Danny, they'll take you here. But there's a chance one of the families will find out about this place. So when you get here, if it's an emergency, just reach out to this tree.
Danny showed them the one. And here, under this branch, there'll be another gate. Can you all reach it? They all proved that they could, even Zena, whose arms weren't all that long.
Where will that gate take us? Asked Pat.
Someplace far away. Someplace where I'll put a stash of money and a weapon. You'll never have to use it, but it'll be there in case somebody's following you through the gate.
So you don't have any idea yet where it'll go, said Pat.
I'm thinking Disney World, said Danny.
A weapon in the Magic Kingdom? Asked Sin. That's just wrong.
I'll find some place safe where I can stash a weapon and nobody will find it, said Danny. For now, though, I'll make it lead to a place in D.C., and then I'll make another gate there and show you all where it is so you can get back to Buena Vista but in a different place.
So we can try it out?
It'll just be sitting there, and if we want to go to D.C., we can use it? Asked Wheeler.
Everybody looked at him.
Once, said Danny. You can try it once to show that you know how to use it. But if you do it any other time, somebody might see you, and then they'd know. It only works as an emergency escape if nobody knows, and that means you never use it. If you want to go to D.C., I'll send you there.
Wheeler laughed nervously. This is really, like, serious and all.
I thought you already understood that, said Danny. If you stay friends with me, if you help me, you're going to be in real danger, and you'll need a real escape route. But if you want to beg off, then do it now. Let's not go any farther. I can leave this school any time. Without me here, you're safe. You haven't been seen doing anything yet.
No, said Zena.
We'll be good, said Hal.
Only Wheeler said nothing.
They all waited. I feel like I've already totally screwed up, and you won't ever trust me no matter what I say, said Wheeler miserably.
I'll trust you until you do something that shows me I shouldn't, said Danny.
But I'm an idiot, said Wheeler.
I told you he knew it, said Sin to Pat.
I mean, I forget stuff. I blab stuff without thinking.
Well, don't, said Danny. That's all.
Wheeler nodded miserably. Then he suddenly disappeared, and there he was over by the tree. He put his finger up where the next gate was going to be.
Wheeler, said Danny, you can't get away from me that way. Every gate I make is part of me. I know where they go, and I know when people go through them. I also haven't put a gate in that tree yet.
I just wanted to see if you had taken away my gate, said Wheeler.
If I ever do, said Danny, I'll tell you. Or I'll take away the condom.
At the thought, he made a small gate that swallowed the condom even though it was in Wheeler's hand. He made it plop onto the ground in the middle of the group.
Wow, said Wheeler. You can take it right out of my hand?
No, I did that, said Zena.
Really? Asked Wheeler.
He really is an idiot, said Pat.
Wheeler, I trust you, said Danny.
Now trust me, too.
But in his heart, Danny knew that he would never really trust Wheeler.
Would never send him out to deliver a message or run an errand more serious than buying sodas or picking up pizzas, because his first instinct had been to use his gate carelessly, to test Danny. He doesn't know how to keep a promise. They're all young. Maybe none of them do. But he was in high school. These were the friends he had. And it was cool that he could attach a gate to an object. I've made enchanted amulets, even if they are just tampons, licorice, a condom, and a little kid's eraser. No magic writing on them, nothing but a tiny gate embedded in them. It made him feel clever and powerful.
And there was Zena's hand on his arm again.
He liked it there. He didn't pull his arm away.
Then he remembered that he didn't actually feel any attraction to Zena. That was before she was attracted to him. Now she was very attractive.
I'm such a teenager myself, thought Danny.
He remembered Lana, Sed's wife back in D.C., how she made him feel. Xena was much nicer than Lana and a lot less crazy. What if Danny had a girlfriend for a while? Not somebody who would seduce him and mock him for succumbing. Not a succubus. An actual girlfriend. Then he remembered the stories of Zeus raping women all over the Aegean. And Hermes. How many women did the old myths have Hermes seducing? There was no lock on a bedroom door that could keep him out. Xena's basically saying I can have her if I want. I could go into her bedroom tonight and sleep with her, and her parents would never see me come in or go out. And she'd let me. She'd think it was cool. Until we'd done it. Then she'd think we were together, and we would be. What if she got pregnant? What if she thought it made her cooler than the other girls, and it caused a rift in the group? Keep your pants zipped and your brain out of Xena's bedroom, Danny told himself. She leaned her head on his shoulder. Danny turned his body to face Xena. She put a hand on his chest. He took the hand and held it between his. We're friends, Xena, and fellow soldiers in a war. Let's see what happens when the war is over. Xena tossed her hand and stepped to Pat. I told you he was gay. Then she laughed as if it had been a joke. Which it was. Mostly. Maybe. I have no business trying to lead a group of any kind. I should take back all these gates and leave right now and never come back. Everybody will be better off if I do that. Everybody but me. He'd been lonely his whole life. This was the first time he had friends, and he couldn't give them up. He didn't want to give them up. And he could do whatever he wanted, and so he was going to stay here with them. Because they thought he was cool. They liked that he was powerful. They weren't trying to kill him. And they liked him before they knew he could do this thing with Gates. And he was going to be thinking about Xena in spite of the fact that he wasn't attracted to her, or to any of the girls. He was 16 now, so any offer was going to make him obsess for a while. Knowing that it was just his hormones making him feel this way didn't make the feelings go away. Might as well enjoy the feeling, as long as he didn't do anything about it. That night, Danny went to D.C., and Stone agreed to let him put the tail of the emergency gate in his attic. But no gun, said Stone. What if someone's coming after them? Asked Danny. Be creative, said Stone. What Danny came up with was a stack of pennies with gates on both sides. As long as you handled them by the edge, you didn't go anywhere. But if you touched heads or tails, you found yourself someplace interesting and public, just inside the gate of the White House, the middle of the Capitol Rotunda, Lincoln's lap, on the nose of the giant in the Awakening statue. If one of his friends was getting chased through the gates, they come to Stone's attic closet, grab a penny, and throw it at whoever comes through the gate after them. Weaponized money, said Stone. But if one of your friends comes through just for fun, I get to throw a penny at them. They're nice, said Danny. I don't want them getting treated badly just because they're drouthers. You know me better than that, said Stone. I'll treat them badly because they're teenagers. When Vivi and Hermia heard about the portable gates, they both demanded some of their own. Vivi had a charm bracelet which she loaded up with rings, each one a gate leading to a useful place. Her condo, the Silverman's farm, Danny's house, Danny's school, Stone's bedroom. I'm his wife. I don't have to use the attic, she said. What if somebody steals the bracelet, said Danny. I suppose if Hermia locks them for you, and you only open them when you... While you were playing with your little friends, said Hermia, we were working. We can't make gates, said Vivi, but now I can lock them, and Hermia can unlock them. We both have lock and key now. We're working on moving gates, said Hermia. I think I moved one, just the tail. But she can't do it again, said Vivi. So then it doesn't have to be a ring, said Danny. I can attach a gate to anything, and it only works when you want it to. Hermia handed him a euro. Put a dozen or so gates on this, she said. I'll only open the ones I need when I need them. Her list of destinations was longer than Vivi's, but she had to stay a jump ahead of her family. Danny attached two dozen gates to the coin. At first he tried to arrange them in some orderly way, but Hermia just laughed.
"Danny, I can see them all. I can tell them apart. I know where they go, and I